Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slamfire Radio, episode 596. Recording on March 12th, 2025. I'm one of your hosts, Adriel.
I'm Countdown Tony.
And that's us. That's us for today. You'll find for the main topic, we've got Kelly on there. But why don't we get into what we did in Guns? Tony, do you want to start us off with what we did in Guns?
Sure. I will make time for you because yours is going to be long, mine is going to be short. I didn't do much in Guns. I don't know if it's laziness. Maybe not. I'm going to say I'm slightly disappointed at Savage at the time. As some listeners may be following the saga, that I shot my Savage Impulse after it came in. Mm-hmm. And I shot it again. The accuracy went way worse. The trigger went way heavy. And the firing pin got way not working. So I emailed them for service, basically, for support. I haven't heard back yet. That was at the very end of January. So, like, pretty much, we'll give it a doubt.
Is that how you contact warranty with them, is through email, or is there a better way?
No, it was the portal, so it was the proper way. As in the IT field, you would say, I submitted a ticket. Mm-hmm. But I haven't heard back yet, so I did wrote a follow-up email just today, so we'll see what they say. Maybe I just listed too many questions and they don't know where to start from. Or maybe I'm blocking too many junk mails, but I don't see any reply reflected on their ticketing platform.
That's odd. Either. Yeah, so, that's really odd. Don't wait so long next time. If it goes like a week, email them again. And this time be like, yo, what the fuck? I've emailed you once before.
Hunting season really far away, so I think you'll be okay. But
yeah, but still, like,
it kind of means I didn't intentionally go out to shoot that gun. Other than that gun, how many guns can I really shoot at this point? I don't know. So I did get this ready for the weekend. We're gonna have our second Ipsic style. I missed the first one. The second Ipsic style shotgun match. I'll be really, really slow. Loading from a bandolier because that's what I have. And I have a 5-round magazine too, which is inappropriate for this sport. Also, PCC and handgun Ipsic champion Taylor will be shooting a manual gun. So I'll get my ass whipped once again in a different division. And also our steel master, who has his professional shooting career in shotguns, also shooting manual. So I'll get my ass double whipped. It'll be great. I'll link the registration link in the description later. And I think it will probably, the first one was quite popular. So we're doing a second one, BTSA. I'm thinking it's at least for the foreseeable future in 2025 will become probably a major regular event at BTSA. That's about all I did this week. Not much. What about you, Adriel?
Oh, more than that. Let's see. Where do I start? 3-gun, I guess, right? So Saturday.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Saturday.
I wasn't shooting my gun, but my gun was shooting itself.
Your gun was shooting at that match. I have to clean it before I get back to you. It was a muddy day. But it ran good. My son was running it. He did have one instance where he put it into the dump sled and the mag, like my cross mag was like sticking out and he like broke it in half. Whoa.
Ejected the mag. Yeah.
Yeah. Those mags do that though. You just put them back together afterwards. I'd rather it do that than bend and bust into a million pieces. It just came off. So easy enough. Right. I shot my M1 Garand. So what did we see? This was real interesting. Lots of different rifles. We saw two SKSs, two M1 Garands, one Ruger American, a Troy PAR. I saw that Taipan.
It's
straight pull and pump.
Australian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And short barrel, so it throws fireballs.
Did they custom barrel that?
No, I think it's just a short barrel.
I thought it came out of factory 16, but I might be wrong.
It might be 16's enough to throw a fireball with 223. With 223
and Troy's are 16 too, so I don't know. Maybe I just got used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. MRA Renegades. Mossberg MVP, of course, and lots of selection. There's probably 1022s. About half the people were running a 1022 of some kind.
No one runs the R9.
Well, I was going to run mine, but I don't have enough mags. I need to pick up some more mags for it because I only have two long mags and one short mag. So that's 25 rounds. It's not enough. Yeah. Not enough for a stage. So, although it might have been enough for this one. It might have been. I didn't use any more than like two end block clips from my M1 Garand. So maybe 25 would have been enough. In any case, fun match. Real muddy and icy as everything is this time of year. So that was good. Oh, yeah. I brought a bunch of these. So that's this like plastic stripper clip thing here. So you put that in your SKS so you can push down and run your five in there. And I saw a competitor running one of those. He had them in different colors. He had like a little pouch on his side that held them as well, so he could pull them out really quickly.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, he said in December his main competition rifle got banned, so that's what he's using.
I don't think this last weekend ban really did much. It's mostly M1s, right?
Where are you talking?
Like the last weekend ban, the Friday ban.
I don't think there was anything last Friday that would have been much. Yeah, that would have been cooked. That would have been used in competition. Like, not really many people using M1 carbines. Let's see. Got connected to an older lady, and she was looking to get out of her firearms, and she was like, "Hey, can I donate these to the RCMP?" And I said, "I'll use those. I'm a PAL instructor, and I'll take them." So. Went over to her place and picked all that stuff up. Some really interesting stuff. So I was joking around with my kid and you know, what do you think I'm going to get there? What are the most ubiquitous Canadian firearms that everyone has? And those of you who are listening to the podcast right now, I'm sure you're just yelling it at the radio, and you're right. Here, I have them right here. A 303 Lee Enfield.
Lee Enfield. Sporterized, of course.
Sporterized, of course. And this one's got a scope on it, which is a little bit interesting. It's got like these
scope?
Leather caps on there. It is Schmidt not labeled.
And Bender? Oh, no.
It's, okay. It's not labeled at all. So I don't know.
Oh, that stock is a little rough.
Is it? Oh, yeah. A couple marks here and there. I mean, it's definitely been refinished, and that's just the finish like flaking off. That looks like a shellac. So maybe that shellac came off, but that's just an opportunity to take it off and put it back to the good old linseed oil, boiled linseed oil. Right?
Was the four?
Oh, there we go. Marksman. What? Marksman 4x32, fully coated. I wonder.
Made in Japan. Makes... Really?
Yeah. Made in Japan scope. 4X. Cool. I like 4X. Fixed 4. It's perfect. No bolt, though, because we couldn't find where
the safe storage was,
where the bolts were. Yeah. So that one's missing a bolt. So that was one of the rifles and one of the firearms. And what's the other firearm that they're definitely going to have?
Kuis.
A Kui. Yeah. At least one Kui. Right. And they had two. One of them was a Kui 64. And I'm just working on this one right now. It the original mag for the Kui 64.
Does it take Savage mags?
With a conversion kit. So the original one is a plastic clip mag. Okay. Plastic mag that goes in there. It doesn't really clip in. Like, you can pull down on it and then it doesn't feed, and you can push up on it. It does feed. It's almost like a magazine cutoff, which, novel idea, but not anymore. But it came with a conversion kit. So I'm just in the middle of, I need to inlet the wood a little bit to get it to fit that conversion kit. So it'll fit the Savage 64.
You're going to bub it. No,
no, no. I'm just going to relieve the inside of the wood underneath this piece of metal here. It'll be fine.
I'm a very bad woodworker, so.
It'll be fine. I'll get the right size drum to match the contour, and I'll sand it, and it'll be fine. It'll look fine. This one's also a Marksman scope, but this one is a 3X 7x20 is what it says. 3-7? Yes, 3-7. It's a, you can change the maverick fixation on it.
Is the parallax of 50 yards as well?
Who knows?
Classic rimfire?
Who knows? Yeah, don't, no idea. But yeah, Savage, you know, Koei 64. Actually, this one's a Winchester 64. It's made by.
So it's the post sell, but pre bankrupt. There's a whole history about it. You can
look it up. I'm not going to get into that right now. There's a Winchester. Oh, what is this? A model 67. This is a single shot Friday. Bolt. Yeah. With a
very creative sling. I love it.
Yeah, very creative sling, piece of string. And this one's also got a scope on it. I don't know what kind of scope that is, but
that is a very traditional, very long scope.
Yep. You need a pump 12 gauge, right? There's the pump 12 gauge. There's a Winchester model 12 with a really long barrel on it. 2¾-inch chamber, fixed full choke, not really the one you want to use for shooting steel or anything like that, but a cool old shotgun. And I think this one's going to find its way into my PAL courses because it's got a very light lifter on it. And the
action that means itself, three gun,
for
your quad loads.
How many rounds can I get in this tube here? Yeah, it's going to be limited on that.
Look at the polish on the action below the action bar. Wow,
That's just there's no finish left on this thing, right? This is probably the gun that got hunted with the most. There was I found lots of like old duck hunting stuff, so I think that this guy was into waterfowling. But this action was not this nice when I first got these. When I first got these, like I can like press the action release this and looks it just way falls. Too nice. Because it's been well used, right? But when I first got it, I was like, man, this action is like kind of gritty. And then I went online and looked, and they're like, Winchester 12 is known for its great, fantastic, smooth action. I'm like, what? I cracked it open, and it needed some cleaning. I posted some photos to my Instagram, and
Is there rusty in there? Because it's a duck.
No. It wasn't rusty. And like, this is something I've found with a lot of like old timers. They have a gun and it's like, oh, it's not running that great. Add more
WD-40.
Add more oil, add more grease, add more oil. And it all just accumulates in there. And it's like, it works for decades, it'll work. And nothing will rust because everything's got a good layer of dirt and grease and mud and all sorts of other stuff on there. Aye. But it was pretty cruddy too. I had to crack out the ultrasonic cleaner just to get like all the, like it was too much work. I'm just like, nope. I declare bankruptcy. Into the ultrasonic cleaner you go. And just because someone had asked online, I'll just, my ultrasonic cleaner, I'll put water in it, just plain water. But then I'll take the really dirty stuff. Oh yeah. I'll put it in a bottle or a jar and I'll put gasoline, diesel, like something to kill the grease and oil, and I'll put it in that and then put that in the water, so all the disgusting stuff stays in the jar. And then when I'm done, I pull it out, rinse it off, and you know, you don't have to clean your ultrasonic cleaner afterwards is what I'm trying to get away
from. I've heard that method too. To be honest I've done things like that for like heating a solution that I want to contain. So a secondary container inside a pan.
Yeah.
Pan isn't dirty.
Double boiler, that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so got them all clean. This, I haven't had a Winchester 12 before, and they're kind of interesting. They're all taken.
And you are going to put it as a PAL gun? What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
It's a PAL gun. So you turn this knob here at the front, and what that does is allow you pull the tube out because the tube's got interrupted threads on it. And the barrel also has interrupted threads on it. So all you
that really means you can get a longer tube for this.
No, because this pin here goes all the way through that that thing. But you pull the action bar forward there, and then you can just rotate it right off. So it's actually very quick to take apart.
Takedown model. Cool.
Yeah. 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 And there's your interrupted threads on the barrel. So
that is interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then all you do is, oh, just make sure you push that all the way down in there.
That is the takedown model. Holy.
And this then looks, turn it.
This reminds me of the Alaskan by Kiapa. It's a lever gun, but similar idea. You twist the tube, you pull the whole barrel thing off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Ruger 10/22 takedown, it has that, like, that same twist kind of idea. And then it had something very odd. And I thought it was... I looked at it and I'm like, oh, Carcano with a, you know, interesting sling attach and all that kind of stuff. But our Carcano anyways.
That cap, geez. Oh, that screw.
Ouch. I love it. I love it. You know what? We need a sling on this thing. I can put a sling on it. There's a lot on here that's like custom made or custom adopted on it. Bubbit is what some people might call, but I've done well enough that it's not going to go anywhere. So I thought, 6.5 Carcano. Fantastic. I got lots of 6.5 Carcano. It says 6.5 millimeter on the top. Odd, right? And it's got double triggers. Odd.
Must be a competition gun. 6.5 Creedmoor it is.
Yeah, 6.5 Creedmoor. That'd be funny. It is an Eaton's Carcano. So, and there's actually, I'm not going to do a video on this because there's already a fantastic video out there on this on YouTube of someone talking about it. And the long story short is Italy got their ass kicked. Austria got a bunch of their surplus rifles. A bunch of Austrian gun makers got all these surplus rifles from Italy and they're like, we don't want these. Let's sporterize them. And that's where you see like double triggers or cut down barrels or sights that are like not factory. And then so Austria was making these things. They sold a bunch to Canada. Eaton's bought them. And then Eaton's had this as a mail order rifle in their catalog in somewhere between 1929 and 1931, 32, somewhere around there. Old anyways.
100 year old. So like this is before the... And what we would usually see as the 9138s, where the Carcano carbines came from. There's a great video on it. if you just search for Eaton's Carcano on YouTube, and there's a Canadian content creator that did that. And these are originally Carcano rifles, like the whole long thing, apparently.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting story.
That they shortened up. And just so people can see, like this back trigger here, you can pull the front trigger. That one works just fine. But what if you want more accuracy? Well, you pull this back one. And now...
It seems really hard. Jeez.
It is really hard. It's way harder than the actual trigger. And then this one is a super light trigger.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I have a question. How's the length of pull on the front trigger? Because double trigger should be front...
Yeah, it's long.
Press on the front first and then pull to the back one, not the other way around. I don't know why. No, maybe it's like my shotgun shooting brain is like, okay, pull the front one first and then slide your hand.
What's the front one without any set on it? Let's find
out. 8 pounds.
8 pounds, you think? Let's find out. Eight. It's
worse than that.
Nine. Oh. 10. Almost 12. Almost 12 pounds.
11, 12.
Now, what is it? After setting it, I'm curious. I haven't done this before. I'm just like,
I'm gonna say,
I'm doing this live in front of you guys for the first time here. Just pulling now. 3 pounds, 5 ounces. That's way better.
It is. Holy.
Yeah. Oh, man. And the sights are way better than this traditional Carcano ones with the roller coaster on it. Yes, it looks like a plain blade notch. It is a plain blade notch. But I like it.
Are you going to hunt with it?
I have too many guns to hunt with. I'm probably going to use one of the other ones.
You're going to use your 300 Win Mag.
Yeah, I got that 300 Win Mag to hunt with, right? It also came with ammo. So, like, all these guns came, like, they're everywhere we looked, more ammo. Looked in a drawer. Hey, look, ammo. Looked in, like, a little tin can, more ammo, right?
I got.
That's kind of funny.
A whole bunch of 410. I think I got to buy a 410.
These are worse money.
Yeah, this is some money here. I think I got to buy a 410 now. That 6.5.
You should buy a Taurus Judge.
No.
Just no. Now?
I'm going to buy a nice folding 410 or a lightweight or maybe an older 410. I'm not quite sure. That 6.5 Carcano is not in 6.5 Carcano. It's in 6.5 Mannlicher Schoen.
Mannlicher Schoenhauer. Yeah. I think that's how they refer to it anyway.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. Not quite the same thing.
It's a bit different. It's like, what, 6552 versus 6554?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. It looks very slow. It looks like practically the same thing when you just look at it. You're like, oh, yeah, that's your standard Carcano. But nope, it's not. But thankfully, there's no three boxes of ammo here. Yeah. Yeah. And then like a million really old boxes of shotgun shells and that kind of thing. S&B, look at that. And look at that.
Paper shells?
Whoa. No. It might be. It might be a waxed paper. Yeah, this is a waxed paper one. And then it's made in Czechoslovakia. And look at the little prints they put on it. Like a lot of this old stuff, they have prints on the primers. They don't do that anymore.
I thought there was a brand that still does it. Like very rare though.
Yeah. And then we got Canadian Tire, Mastercraft, shotgun shells.
Mastercraft Supreme 12 gauge.
Yeah, good for your
tires.
Good for your tires, good for your wrenches, shotgun shells. Yeah, they do it all, right? There's a bunch of really odd ammo it came with. There's some what is it again? 455 Webley rounds in there that have like kind of oxidized, and a bunch of other old stuff that's kind of interesting.
HGG Hunting Museum.
Hunting Museum, yeah. Well, some of this stuff was like, take a look at this rimfire here. I love it. It's very 60s, 70s.
It just says 22.
Yeah. 22 long rifle. It says non-corrosive. Non-erosive. I love it. What does that mean?
What?
The non-corrosive means something. The non-erosive, I think they just wanted to rhyme it and make it sound catchy.
Like it's not going to erode your barrel just because it's flying so slow?
It's made by Nitron or Nitron? I don't know.
Where?
This stuff predates me. I'm not aware of it. Yeah. Crap load of shotgun shells that would be great if we could still use lead on ducks and geese because they're all lead.
Well, yeah. Grouse is still okay, right?
Grouse is still okay, yeah.
Rabbit's okay.
But like number four lead shot, like, oh man, that's devastating stuff there. Yeah. Like 3-inch Magnum, like, oh my god, this is,
wow,
this
has got some, that's power, that's some to it, high, right? Brass, jeez.
Yeah, high brass, CIL Imperial 3-inch number 4. This stuff would devastate like ducks and geese,
hard to use that stuff.
That one has a piece of tape on it that says 1971, which is this guy like labeled when he bought stuff, so
that's pretty cool.
Labels everywhere. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, a bunch of cool stuff. My room smells like old grease, really old gun grease, and it's not pleasant.
Really? Huh?
Yeah, not really pleasant. No, it's kind of odd smelling. And then I got this off Cabela's. I think I was looking at this during one of our shows. It was a Heritage Rough Rider carbine. It's a revolver, single action. I got it because it was cheap, on sale. It was on sale. And I was like, I don't think I've reviewed one of those before. But I can see why now. So you like, this is how they show you to shoot it in the book. They got a little hook right on the trigger guard there. You hold that with your left hand and then you pull the gun up like this, which you can, like, there's not a lot of weight out there, but that's a better way of supporting the rifle. You just can't do it because there's going to be crap coming out of the cylinder gap.
Well, you might be able to do it once.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would have risked
it. Let's go with that. Yep. This, so Heritage has terrible model naming. There's actually three versions of this. They're all the same name. They're all the same name.
What's the difference then?
There's one that's black and it's like a modern carbine thing. It's like got a black stock on it. There's this one. And then there's this one with no sling swivels and no buckhorn sight. Instead, you just got to use the gutter in there, which this one also has. The one with the sling and the buckhorn sight is like $50 more. That's the one. That's this one.
But it doesn't say which one is which. Like, it doesn't say the Rough Rider modernized.
Deluxe. I would say, like, you got your regular your deluxe. The deluxe has buckhorn sights and sling swivels, and it comes with a leather sling. Hey, fantastic. That would be a great idea. No, they don't name them like this. They should have.
Yeah.
And then, so I've shot the Heritage Rough Rider, like the handgun version. I've shot my Ruger Wrangler. They're both trying to do the same thing. They're both trying to be like a Colt 1873
Peacemaker,
army.
But
yeah, Colt Army, right?
But 22.
But in 22. This one does some things better, but I still prefer the... So the things it does better, it's actually got like a better approximation of the clicking action. So you hear all those clicks. Those are all doing different things.
Right.
So when this is like fully down, sorry, that's fully down. And then you have one click that's just that's slightly away. And then there's your half cock right there. Right. That's your safety. And then there's all the way back. And when it's like this, you can't use a cylinder. When it's like that, you can't use the cylinder. When it's on half cock, then you can use the cylinder and click it back.
Really? You couldn't use your cylinder on quarter. Huh? Interesting. Okay.
No. Whereas the Ruger Wrangler,
it has a gate safety, right?
Yeah, you just flip the gate and then you can just start rotating it. And you flip the gate back and it's fine. There is no safety on it. When you're ready to fire, you pull it all the way back. And it also has a transfer bar in there as the
Where the safety
drop
is.
Safety. Yeah, so yeah.
It's very much modernized. And I think some people criticize it being not as original.
Okay, granted, yes. But these guys had to put a flag safety on there. So they've got a safety right there.
Oh my God, I have manual safety on top of manual safeties.
On top of the hammer safety. Like, I can just use a hammer. This is a single action revolver.
What?
The only time I'm going to use this like hammer is when I'm going to shoot something. But like, keep in mind, you pull it all the way back and now you have to let it down safely. Maybe you drop it. I don't know. Like, I guess you can with the Ruger too.
Here's my thought on that. Heritage Arm is the same company as Rossi. And what Rossi does with their lever guns is they have a flag safety on top of their lever guns, which maybe is because I'm assuming this is produced in Brazil as well.
No, I think these are, it says Brainsbridge GA. I think these are made in the US.
No, that's their headquarters, I believe.
Let me read the other side here. Read manual.
Need to figure it out on Amerletics, but
doesn't say
I would assume is maybe Brazilian law says you have to have it, because in comparison,
the Americans have to put safeties on everything.
Not necessarily.
They Henry love putting does extra not. Safeties. What's right, that?
But Henry does not. Henry's lever guns does not have a safety.
That's because Henry's cool.
Well, maybe it's a lawyer thing, but at least, from what I understand, U.S. doesn't have a mandatory requirement for that.
But maybe the guns that are like the 9mm Tokarevs that we got in Canada that were meant for the U.S., they had a manual safety on them, like added to the Tokarev. I think there was some sort of import thing with the U.S. at some point.
Probably. Well, maybe it could be import thing. You can manufacture a gun in the States without it. But if you're importing something, it has to be something else.
That sounds about right. Anyways, with this thing side by side with the Ruger is higher quality, like noticeably higher quality. Everything about this screams, like the finish and that kind of stuff is like, kind of cheesy, not really that great. It looks like it's not made of steel or even aluminum. It just looks like, I don't know, zinc casting, like the receiver here is looks like a zinc casting kind of thing, because the paint's not quite taking to it. The barrel looks fine. It's it was just a standard barrel. Yeah. But I'll review it.
Try it out.
I was writing the review of it, and I was being a little bit uncharitable to it, because I was like, is this practical? No. Can you use this for hunting? I guess you could. Do you want to? No, not at all. Like the loading and unloading and the sights and like everything. No. And they're not even that light. Like this is not even that light. I could get a Winchester Wildcat for half the price, or not half the price, quite a bit less than this. It's semi-automatic. It's much lighter, and I can put a scope on it or something like that. You're not putting a scope on this thing.
But this looks cool.
It does look cool if you're into that kind of thing.
I guess you're not into that. Okay, so
not really.
I have some information. Apparently, it could be made in the U.S. Rough Rider rifle, revolver, non-restricted, introduced in 2020. Heritage manufacturing, country of manufacture, USA.
There we go. I thought they were made in the U.S.
Who's
not everything made in the U.S. is amazing quality.
That's true. It's fair.
See, high point. I think that's everything I did. I don't have a shooting activity or a PAL course this weekend. Can you believe it?
What are you doing?
I don't know. I maybe I'll go to the range and just have fun.
Means shooting activity. Anyway.
Well, I guess I'm stuck in a loop. okay.
Need to review now.
You think? I need to review the revolver carbine and this Winchester 12. I want to review it before I disable it for PAL courses, and maybe I'll shoot that Savage 64 and just make sure that magazine works.
Just another Stevens 320. Why do you have to shoot a historical artifact?
They're not worth that much. They're not. It's not that historical. Like the Eaton's Carcano, like that is getting old. But like these are fairly inexpensive on the used market.
Okay.
And that's what the owner wanted for these firearms, is for them to be used to teach people education.
What if I traded a gun? So in spirit, it is still teaching people, but in reality, it's a little different. Anyway.
Nah. That's what they want. Anyways, where are we going? Upcoming events. We're doing this focus on Canadian retailers. If you are a Canadian firearms retailer or manufacturer or distributor or something like that, you're going to come on the show and tell everyone about your company, we want to cover you. So come on. Send us an email, sunfireradio@gmail.com. Maple Seeds, I'm working on some dates right now. So I want to get some dates in May. That are in the Edmonton area. So that should be coming up fairly soon.
No KD? No KD.
I'm not going to do the KD this year for Maple Seed. Because...
Can Slamfire host join cool. for free or no?
What's that? Sorry?
Can Slamfire host shoot QDs for free or no?
Oh, I mean, on our own time, we can do anything we want to.
That's so true.
Yeah, if we wanted to, like, I don't know, head out to... not Ghost Plus, but like somewhere around where you're at or somewhere in between and just shoot one of these for funsies, we could.
At HEG hunting camp, you have to pass the maple seed before you can pull the trigger on a deer. So
not a bad idea.
Yearly recall.
HG firearms training. My March 22nd one's like sold out. I can't take any more. I was talking to some guys about doing some private courses coming up. 23rd, the RPAL, that one's not sold out, but it keeps adding people. April 5th is
a ramp up as the political landscape is changing, so to speak.
I don't know if it's the political landscape or the weather, because like as we get into spring, this happened last year. As we got into spring, like I got like lots and lots more people. And then starting in the summer, it started slowing down. And then by Christmas, it was like really slow. So I don't know. I've been asking people. no one said like, oh, I'm scared of Trump and therefore I want to buy some guns. No one said that. But keeping in mind where I'm at, right? Edmonton, like it's not maybe
it's pretty stable.
Yeah, maybe in like Vancouver or Toronto or something like that, you might get some people saying that, but not so much in Edmonton. Not really. Chaz,
April 5th and 6th,
Devon. Yeah, April 5th and 6th in Devon. That one has space, so if you want to get in, that's a little bit closer to the city too as well. It's just south, so it's easier to get to. Three Gun, yeah, that March 8th one is good. We'll probably do another one in April here coming up. CCFR AGM's coming up. Just find that on Facebook. Toronto Sportsman Show. Dave will be at the Ontario Council of Shooters table. That'll be Thursday, Friday. He will have limited Slamfire patches available, but you have to say, hey, I know you from Slamfire. And you have to call him Ren.
Set a passcode for that.
Yeah. Something like that. You know, cover these BTSA matches?
Yep. So we're having BTSA match coming up, as I mentioned, on the 16th, which should be the Sunday. Ipsic style PCC. What am I doing? Ipsic style shotgun, not PCC. And I think there's some extended rule sets for this one too. You don't have to have a black badge. It's not Ipsic sanctioned. There are like divisions for like three gun divisions too. So if you have a TAC Ops pump gun, I think you can shoot that too. Mm-hmm. Like pump action, but with the optics, which Ipsic doesn't have a division for that. So if you are into three gun, but you're cross training, and you can come to a match as well.
Cool. Let's get over to news. Carney was anointed the Liberal leader of the
landslide.
Landslide victory, yeah. And Friday is when he is turned over to be PM. So
this Friday. I didn't even know. Huh, okay.
Yeah, this Friday he turns into the PM. He turns into our prime minister. And it's expected we'll get a vote. Like he'll call for a vote soon after.
Right away. Maybe. Okay.
Cool. I don't know if it'll be the same day, but soon after. Which is good because Singh said he might not vote no confidence because they're looking like a complete blowout right now. So technically speaking, if the next Liberal Party leader got, like if Carney got in, he's like, man, I'm just happy like doing what I'm doing right now. And Singh doesn't vote for no confidence, we're stuck with these guys until October again.
I think that's if he does that, that's the biggest flip-flop he ever done. He's like, we don't have trust. Singh
flip-flops all the time.
That's true, but this is as clear as it gets. So
yeah.
Fellow MVP voters, I guess, consider your options.
I don't think the Liberal Party will do it though, because right now their chances are as good as they're ever going to get. Like right now they're even pulling even with the Conservative Party, so they might as well like go for it. I don't want to get too political on the show, but like if you are, and like in Alberta, our votes don't matter here, Tony. So like who cares what we vote for and whatnot, but. If you are
in Calgary, well, I think my district is okay, but still.
Yeah, I'm not in a swing riding by far. If you're in a swing riding,
go out and vote.
You might want to consider voting. Support the CPMR. Well, so I've been talking with some people online about this, and again, I don't want to get too political, but this election, I mean, I haven't said this about past elections. You can go back and listen to past episodes of Slamfire. I didn't wax poetic about how it was the end days just because the Liberals got in the first time, the second time, or the you know, third time. But this time, this is the beginning of this. This isn't the beginning of the end for gun owners. This is like, this is getting to it. We're getting to the point now where they've removed so many firearms and it's killed off so many different kinds of competitions that, yeah, we gotta get in. Like we have to get the Conservatives in. So if you are on the fence, you're like, I don't really like the Conservatives for this reason or that reason, I would encourage you to hold your nose and vote for them anyways this election, because like your guns are going to be gone. It's going to get silly. So keeping in mind that mag chop thing might become a thing. the RCMP just doing whatever they want to and just banning things willy-nilly. That seems like it's what's happening right now. And the conservatives are more likely to fix this than any of the other parties. The other parties will make it worse.
They just triple tapped IPSC. Like it went from magazine limit to, okay, no more IPSC pistols for newcomers, to no more IPSC PC seeds, and no more IPSC rifles, to like, okay, IPSC shotguns, where you at now?
Yeah, and
you don't get full CAMEX for that either. So the only division that's internationally comparable is like IPSC shotgun manual.
Clays, yeah, five stand, yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah, those will still stick around for decades to come, but the restrictions are beyond silly. And like IPSC shotgun, you might see semi-automatic shotguns get banned at some point. I don't think you'll see pump shotguns be banned at some point. They might just be restricted to a point where it's silly. Handguns, ATTs, that's definitely something possible that they could just stop issuing, because that's what they did with short barrel handguns. You originally could use those. You could take them to the range and that kind of thing. And then they just stopped issuing ATTs. Now you can't do anything with them. You're just stuck with them. A lot of old timers have those old short barreled handguns. Can't do anything with them. Or old FALs or Sturmgewehrs and that kind of thing. They can't do anything with them. They can't even take them to the range. They just sit at their house, right? So it's, basically it's just a waiting game. Just wait for those owners to die and then collect them. Yeah. Anyways, vote conservative. Encourage your friends and family to vote conservative, because otherwise our gun rights might be gone. SIG went all in on saying their guns don't misfire. Ever.
I'm not too familiar with the story. I heard the memes, though.
Okay, so the original SIG P320 was... they took the P250 and they like changed it to make it striker-fired. So it wasn't right, originally you made drop to it, like, at this fired.
Angle.
Yeah, if you dropped it at a specific angle, it could fire. So they changed some things on it to make it less likely to do that. But there's still, like, there's a lot of them out there, and there's a lot of them out there doing some weird stuff. They're firing in holsters. They're firing when moved, but still in a holster. And SIG has lost some of these lawsuits. But nevertheless, they still came out with this claim saying, hey, our guns don't misfire ever unless the trigger's pulled, and that's final. Even though there's been all these lawsuits where they've either lost or they've paid it out or whatnot. So I don't know why. Yeah. Anyways, the internet's tearing apart, rightfully so, because they're being silly about it. Why don't we get into new gun stuff? So I'm going to present.
Do we have much new gun stuff? It's a very
Well, I was going to go through Canadian gun nuts and kind of see what we can see here. That's the wrong one. Let's present the other screen. That's the one I was looking for. Antler Arms. So Profit River has some exclusives from Antler Arms. They are some bolt action rifles. I haven't really heard of these before.
It's 375 H&H. That's the one you want.
I have some 375 H&H.
Why?
I've actually been cleaning a bunch of cases because I've been sitting on too much brass, so I'm cleaning a bunch of it to sell. And my kid's been doing it, so that he's going to take like half the proceeds. And I found some.
Oh my god! H&H.
I'm sure that'll sell for some good money. Looks like Bullseye's running a pre-order on some cryptos starting today. So you can pre-order the crypto from them for $1,999. Still non-restricted, or at least not prohibited.
Not prohibited.
Inner Surplus has a bunch of vintage rifles and shotguns under $200. I have more than a couple of their things. Yeah. I like Inner Surplus.
K31s.
Yeah, they have the K31s. They have all sorts of interesting stuff over there. I was looking. They didn't have enough 410s for my liking. I was looking at their shotguns, and I think you can go, 410. But they had some really like this one here. Wow. Look at this. 3.8 pounds. That's ridiculous. But I don't like the comb on this one. It's like it drops down
too much. That drops so hard. Jeez.
Yeah, it does. So I didn't really like that one for the drop, but I like the weight. And then they have some other ones here. This one's 4.3 pounds.
It's so long, though. You need to find the shortest one so you can take it grass hunting.
Yeah, I agree. I do want a shorter one. And these are all a little bit long, so... I don't know. But anyways, these guys have a lot of great stuff. I like Inner Surplus. Let's see. Lyman Bore Camera Shooting Center has that. Those are cool. Iron Guns has the F&H magazine. So the PS90s for $45 in Canada. What?
Per five round?
$550. Yep. And that gun is prohib. But, you know.
Oh, is that? Oh, it might be. I don't even
it has know to anymore. Be. It has to be. Is it not? I'm looking it up right now. If anyone online here wants to, just go to Armaletics. PS90? Yeah, there's a PS90. What are you? Affected by OSD number 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Prohib. Anything else cool here? Streamlight. Normasail at Flaherty's. Beretta 13-01 sweepstakes at S&J Hardware. Sterling R9 Mark 1s at Target Sports. I think that's about it. And I was looking at Cabela's just a little bit earlier here just to see what they had on sale for their Wild Wednesday. And they've got most of their standard stuff on sale. They got the Mossberg Patriot on for $514 with a scope.
It's Mossberg Patriot.
What kind of scope? It's a scope.
I see because of Vortex, too.
It doesn't specify. It just says 3-9. It can be with a Vortex, but usually the ones with the Vortex cost more. But this one's in 270 Winchester. Are they all 514? Oh, they might be. Yeah, they're all 514. 300 Winchester. I wonder if that's 300 Winchester Magnum. Probably, hey?
Probably.
It says 300 Winchester.
It's three rounds. I'm thinking it is.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. They have the Nork Red Box for, that looks like 60 cents per round. It's give or take. Savage 64 with a scope for $259. This one I was looking at actually. They have the CVA Scout single shot in 45-70 government for $479. That's got to be the cheapest 45-70 you can buy.
Yes. Well, CVA Scout has been affordable for, but I think I was looking for a particular one. I don't think they make one in 357 mag.
No, 44 Magnum's better though. And they have that one.
I don't want to use large primers. That's dumb.
I have lots of large primers. You want large primers?
I have 357 brass. I don't need more stuff.
44 Magnum's anyway. Cooler than 357 Magnum though.
Oh, God. You can't shoot. I'm not going to shoot IPSC with a 44 mag. Are you kidding me?
No. But a 45-70 break action. Now we're talking. It's just too bad it's so heavy. Look at this. 7.5 pounds.
What?
I can get a bolt action.
What the lighter than hell? That. Why is it so heavy?
I don't know. It must be the barrel.
25-inch barrel, though. Also, they don't make one in 308. That's kind of a shame.
No, I guess they don't. At least not one for sale at Cabela's. Anyways. I found those kind of interesting. All right. What have we gone to the main topic? And welcome to the show, Shane and Carrie from EM Precision. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So maybe just to start us off, tell us a little bit about yourselves and about EM Precision and how it came to be.
Well, I guess it's not really a fancy story or anything. I got into the gun community probably 18 years ago, started shooting. I was a member of the Canadian Historical Arms Society. And of course, we were going through a bunch of regulatory stuff at the time and land issues. And we had a long range, and then the long range got shut down. So I jumped over to three gun and I started shooting three gun. That's actually where I met my business partner, Steve, was at a shoot. And I was complaining about not being able to shoot long range anymore. And Steve's a little bit older than I am. He ended up taking me out to a site that he used to shoot fairly regularly. And he kind of mentored me and took me under his wing and started teaching me long range and precision rifle and all that stuff. So first day out with him, I think I'd only been shooting for 2 months, 3 months maybe, just learned how to hand load. He took me out to an oil field lease and we were hitting 1,370 meters with 308s. Mm-hmm. So it got me addicted pretty quickly. I ended up selling that rifle, building my first custom with, I don't think he's in business anymore, but it was North Shore Barrels in Ontario, built my first 284 for me. And, Steve and I, when the Edson range first opened up, we ended up donating a bunch of steel to the facility and got lifetime membership. So we were heading out there to go shoot. And, I had a 338 LePou Improved being built by another buddy of ours, Jason Anderson. And, everything was coming in. The McMillan was ordered. The Defiance was ordered. All that stuff was ordered. And that was right when we went from fairly even on the dollar to absolute shit the bed. It dropped 24 cents in a couple of months. And I didn't have everything paid off. Like McMillan and Defiance, they typically don't want you to pay until it ships. So I ended up getting hammered with a 25-30% increase on the total cost of my build in the middle of it. So Steve and I were kind of having a bullshit and a conversation saying that in Canada, even at that point, I mean, this is going back 14 years ago, even at that point, we had a lot of Canadian manufacturers and product that we felt that we could get into the business, build a little bit more economical rifle, support some of the Canadian industry stuff, and not deal with that instability. For guys like Steve and I, like, we don't really have any other hobbies. It's just shooting. So your budget is all dedicated to it anyways. But It was hard for a lot of guys. If you weren't super passionate about it, it could be off-putting to see those that kind of volatility and those fluctuations. And again, just the sheer cost of building something. So we were joking, like it wasn't a real serious thing. We said, well, why don't, like, Steve had a lathe and Steve's a welder. So he's like, well, how hard can machining be? So he sat with Jay Anderson. Jay gave him kind of the running head start at it. Jay's wife had passed and he got out of the business. So Steve kind of said, like, if we do 5 or 6 barrels a year for buddies inside circle, it'll pay for our barrels. Well, our first year we did 88 rifles and we ran it that way for a couple of seasons, just kind of under the table as a side little hobby, but we realized we had enough interest in it that we had to get a little bit more legitimate. We started the company by selling my first custom rifle and we put those funds into buying products. So the first couple of years we started, we bought everything third party from a importer and put them all together. And we dealt with a lot of Canadian, like we used like 150 Bob Jury barrels right at the very beginning. He's had a Red Deer, awesome guy to deal with. We supported KS and KS Arms. We were with MDT right at the beginning. I think we were one of the very first trigger tech dealers, KDEX. So like I say, we had a lot of options to minimize our import. But as we got bigger, we've kind of averaged about 150 rifles a year for the last decade. It's one of those things that if you truly want to be there, there are some American products that have developed enough value that you have to be able to bring them in. So we just moved to direct import. We've been working with a couple of different vendors for several years now, and we build rifles. And of course, when we started the company, Malcolm, our boy, was just born. And of course, Carrie, with the new infant at home, it was tough, right? So she wasn't able to come out and shoot all the time. And she did grow up with a little bit of shooting. She was familiar with it. So the first few years, it was just kind of me and Steve out doing everything. And then as Malcolm got a little bit more independent and older, I just realized how much time it was taking away from my relationship and my personal life. And Carrie got involved. Like that was really the easy button to be successful in both the business as well as our marriage. She just started shooting with us and she's really taken it seriously as far as putting in the time and the effort and listening and the instruction. And she's gone from not knowing anything to last year, she was supposed to go to the Worlds. We had a schedule conflict. And I mean, now she's starting to dope her own gun. We don't wind call for her anymore. If anything, we try and sabotage her. She's had a lot of fun in the growth of it. And it's just kind of turned into a thing where I think having her come and participate, it's something that EM's always valued, was the family commitment to the sport. And I think that's something we're probably going to discuss today, is what people use their firearms for. And this is a family thing for us. Like our boy shot his first match last year. He's got his own rifle. He's going to be coming out this year. And hopefully he's going to get in 4 or 5 matches. It's something that we do together. Carrie and I, that's kind of our thing. We go out and do. It's encouraged other people to start bringing their spouse. I don't want to say we're responsible for it. Like that's not what I'm getting at, but I think it was encouraging for other ladies to see that there was a woman shooting at these matches. Yeah. And now we're seeing, like, the ladies division is mostly youths, daughters coming in.
It's awesome.
And there's a bunch of wives. So it's turned into that thing where we're trying to treat it like a sport, not like something tactical or tactical.
You see, every year there's more and more families and more wives, and it's so great to see. And every family that I see out there, I'm always trying to get them to bring wives, bring kids, everybody come out. It's fun. It's a family thing. So I don't know. Every year I see it grow, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot about normalizing it, right? Because people, and we get that all the time when people find out we shoot as a couple or that we compete. And at the distances that PRS and NRL and ELR take place at, a lot of people are a little surprised by it. And of course, you get the people who are not in the community or in the sport a little shocked by it. And then you start hearing it and you see it. And like we have a sponsor shooter team. I think we have 13 guys and Gary that shoot for the company as brand ambassadors. And don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. we paid. Like, this is Canada. Nobody makes money in the gun business. But we found a really good group of people that are out there to grow the community. And that's what it was. We don't look for first place winners. We look at people who are going to take you to the range, go through your reloading process, help you out, mentor you, loan you their gear, right? And one of our rules is, like, we don't support camouflage. And it's not like we're anti-camouflage. When we shot three gun, everybody was tacked vests and camouflage and stuff. But our jerseys are not camouflage. We try to stick to bright colored guns. We do a lot of fun stuff because we're trying to have it more normalized. I mean, it would be fantastic to one day see media coverage of what we do, and you're starting to see it in the States. But while we get a lot of jokes about the jersey crew, it's one of those things that's meant to make it look like a sport, whether it be golfing or pro fishing or baseball or basketball. We want people to recognize that it is a sport, and we see the regulatory changes, you're affecting a sporting event that families participate in. You're not affecting a bunch of redneck hillbillies living in bunkers that are prepping for the end of the world. That's not what we're doing. And frankly, even with all the gun control, like, we build $4,000 to $8,000 rifles. Those are not the ones being used in crimes. They're not the average gangbanger coming out buying that stuff. These are typically high tax paying citizens who've contributed, and they want to buy something nice, and they want to shoot a sport with a community that's very like-minded. And I think we've done great, not us, but I mean, I think Canadians have done a great job growing that community in the last decade. I've seen it absolutely blow up.
Do you want to show your rifle that's right behind you, Shane?
Yeah.
Okay. So when, Shane gets that, Carrie and I, we met couple of years ago, and when we were shooting the Gunny Girl calendar, and she brought out her rifle, and Shane's absolutely 100% correct when we talk about the people that are using these rifles, and Carrie did bring out her rifle, and it's a beautiful rifle, by the way. Got to lovingly hold it, but also it is quite heavy. So PRS rifle is quite heavy, and it is something that you need to know your stuff when you're shooting it. But now that Shane has his rifle out, can you tell us all about the rifle that you have in front of you?
Yeah, so I'll hold it for a second because it is heavy. But this is my current configuration, I guess, for this year. I take it upon myself to be responsible for the products that we sell. So generally what we do is I usually build something off of it, demo it for a while, make sure that it's something that we'll put our name behind. And that's not criticizing manufacturers, but it's a full turnkey thing. When you come to us, we want you to buy the rifle, have your service and your warranty, and you don't have to go to a bunch of other suppliers or vendors if you ever have any issues. So we like dealing with vendors that really stand behind you and support you. And that whole thing, that's not
it. That's not going to work.
No, stop that. So we're pretty particular about some of the brands that we work with. And a lot of it comes down to relationship, because I'll be honest, it doesn't matter if you're shooting a Curtis or an Impact or Defiance or Falcor. Like, there's so many fantastic products out there that a lot of it just comes down to relationship and the kind of service. And we've built a long relationship with a couple of our vendors that we're very comfortable with. But like this one here is it's a Curtis Custom Action. It's basically their Scout model, but there's a few gunsmiths or vendors that have different specifications that they produce for. We're one of them. GA Precision, Recorder Custom Rifles, Accurate Mag. There's a few different guys who have branded actions from Chase, which is awesome. So we spec this out to basically be identical to the Valor, the premium expensive action, without any trade-offs other than being non-integral. And it drops to $700 off the price of the action. I was an oil patch guy. I lost my job during the COVID thing. I know how tough it is in Canada right now. Like our costs are really out of control. Our ammunition prices are high. The dollar exchange is shitty. So we try to do what we can to create value in the builds. And I'm not saying they get a lot cheaper, but we try where we can. Because the idea is to get more people doing it, not become an elitist builder that only the top 3% can afford. So we talked to Chase. We had him spec out this action the way we wanted it. It's a little bit different than the GA Precision version. We do a different recoil lug. So we have one barrel tenon for all Curtis actions in Canada, which means that between Carrie and I, she's got one of the original Vectors. I've got a Valor. I've got a Pulse. And my boy's got one of the original Vectors as well. We have, I think, 7 barrels that we switch between all of us because the Curtises, they come with a quick change option on them. Okay. So we juggle calibers and we switch stuff around, and they've worked well for us. I'm personally a fan of the 3-lug. Nah, I can't do it.
Here, left the front and I'll left the back.
Of a 3-lug action, you can see that they're it's at 60 degrees, not 90 degrees. Yeah. End of dragging, yeah. You're not... I got using those years ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I just stick to them. My new one being built right now, we teed up with American Rifle Company, their new coup de grace action, worst name on the planet. But it's a beautiful action with some really cool innovation. We were a little uncomfortable with maybe the company at first. We didn't have a good relationship with them. We didn't know them well. We met with them this January, built up a lot of confidence in our conversations. So I have one being built on the action right now. We're going to start bringing them in. And again, it's kind of that test it before you sell it to everybody else thing. And we wanted to take a look at it and put a barrel on one and see what the ins and outs were. Because there are some products that maybe get advertised a little bit more than they are. And guys end up disappointed with it. You end up chasing service and warranty issues. So one of our stipulations with working with vendors is that we want to be a warranty center as well. So American Rifle Company has been awesome about that. Curtis keeps us supplied with all the small parts and replacement stuff that we need up here. So you're not having to deal with that cross-border nonsense.
Yeah.
But yeah, like this one here is a 25 Creedmoor. I've been shooting a 25 Creedmoor for 6 years, 5 or 6 years. I jumped on it really, really early on. And Steve's a crotchety old bastard. If anybody knows him, he is not open to new ideas. He doesn't like any. He thought the Creedmoor was a waste of time. And it's turned out to be one of the greatest in precision rifle, not PRS.
Yeah.
So when the 25 came out, I'll be honest, I was just sick of fighting, trying to find 140 burgers or 105 burgers. So Blackjack came out. They turnkeyed, tight twist, high BC bullets. I jumped on it right away. Really, really happy with it. We spent the last two seasons shooting 6 arcs, which was probably a huge mistake, but I'm back to 257. I shoot one in my NRL rifle, my PRS rifle. Carrie's got a brand new barrel on her rifle this year. She went from 6 arc last year up to 25 Creedmoor because I've actually gone through 7 barrels with the exact same load, and it's consistently shot 10 round groups under 3/4, which is fine for my needs, especially when I don't have to have dedicated loads per barrel. So we've been really happy. Our team captain, Mike Friesen, he went to 25 Creedmoor. Nelson Jolet is one of our guys out in Quebec. He's going to 25-47. Dallas Daku runs Coyote Assassins. He's one of our guys out of Saskatchewan. He went to the 25-47 improved. We've had a few of these different changes, right? And I'm a huge fan. I think the 257 is awesome. And the supply chain on it is great because you don't have everybody and their dog shooting one. Ended up going with a Spearhead machine break. Those guys are actually, they're two of the guys that we looked up to when we first got into the industry. Will and Kevin are fantastic builders, the Chow brothers. They used to build the rifles. And I remember when we got started, we always said that hopefully one day we'll have that reputation that those guys built. And they reached out to us and they were extremely gracious. And they asked if we would start using their brakes, and the machining on the brake is phenomenal. It's a really nice piece of equipment. So we're really migrating over to that, both personally and in the business. I shot a chassis for a couple of years and I actually found I was performing poorly, and I've shot McMillan for a long time. So on this one, I have a Manners TCS. Like, we're not even a Manners dealer, but I ended up getting a good price on it from, a buddy runs Saperl. And so I put it on because it was as close to a McMillan as I could get. And I wanted to try it out, and I do like it. It is a very nice platform, but my new rifle is another McMillan.
Ah, okay.
So the ergonomics are a major player when you come to building these things. I mean, a lot of the models because you're getting very universal fitments now. Like the MDT product is really overtaking the Canadian space.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to find something you're comfortable with, and you're going to perform better. And sometimes that takes a few iterations, and sometimes you know right away. And so long as you have the adjustability, you're good. So I prefer stocks. I'm going to continue to stay shooting stocks. My wife and my boy both shoot chassis. Like Carrie shoots a ACC Elite, and the boy was shooting an MDT last year, but I think I just sold that, and I'm putting him into a KDEX. And honestly. Oh. Having a little bit of everything. So when guys come over, or guys want to check it out, you can give them real feedback on how something performs or what those comparisons are.
Yeah. You're talking about some really good chassis and companies there. Again, Canadian companies as well, some of them. Going back to what you just said, you want that reputation, or Steve wanted that reputation. I think that you guys do have that reputation of being the go-to, especially when we're talking about precision rifles. Carrie, do you want to talk a little bit about your rise with and how EM has supported you in precision rifles?
Absolutely. I mean, I obviously wouldn't be here if it wasn't for EM. Shane and Steve have been amazing. They've taken me under their wing to teach me everything from ground up. So even when it was my first shoot, I was so stressed out. I was so worried. But Shane was really great and showed me everything, like positioning. Of course, I definitely did not all get all my rounds off or anything, let alone make many hits the first shoot. But they were so patient with me and they explained everything and it was great. Like Shane said, our team captain, Mikey Friesen, was also an excellent teacher. He when you can't learn from your husband, learn from someone else.
Yeah.
So
Mikey did a really good job for me.
Yeah.
He stepped in there and really took over a lot of that mentorship with Carrie, because I can be a little competitive and I can be a little short-tempered. So
no,
just solely up to me to teach her, it was probably going to be an issue.
Yeah.
And Mike is that guy. Like, I mean, that's why he's been on our team longer than anybody else. He's that guy that takes anybody and everybody the range, helps everybody out. He's there to, I mean, he doesn't do a very good job posting or advertising us, but he does a good job engaging with the community and helping people grow, right? He's Calgary Police Service, so he's been kind of ingrained in it in the last 20 years. We've known him for a long time, built a few rifles for him before we ever discussed any business, but it certainly helps. Like when we squad up, where there's typically 5 or 6 team members every time we squad up, and we try to leave a space for 4 or 5 guys who maybe new or maybe not have all the gear. And I'm not saying, like, I don't think any of us, well, no, I got a few guys on our team who are top tier shooters. But a lot of us guys are mid pack, but we're there to grow the community. Whether you need to borrow a tripod or a bag, or you just want a little bit of help on how the positions are done, or maybe some win calls because it's your first couple of matches.
Yeah.
That's what we're there to do. Like I can be competitive in some aspects. I actually don't give a shit where I finish in a PRS match. So long as I've left with a smile, I've done the best I can. And then I got some engagement with the community.
Yeah.
So Mike was a big help with that. Like even the King of 2 Miles. So we were shooting the King of 2 Miles for, well, we have since its inauguration in 2020. And Mike ended up going to the Worlds for PRS last year. So I needed a partner. No, this is 2 years ago. So Mike ended up shooting with me. And Carrie, we needed another partner because we had a guy drop out. And Carrie ended up shooting with Steve. And again, it was that no domestics on the line. And her and Steve got along really well. I mean, they didn't perform very well, but ELR is very difficult.
It was, especially for your very first one. And you don't get to shoot those distances very often. So to practice for something like that gets a little hard, too. You end up having to find a cut line or, you know, or private land or something. And so I don't think I went out more than twice maybe that year to practice. So by the time we get out there, the wind conditions are totally different because it's plains instead of big tree cut lines. You're getting switch winds coming from all different angles behind you. And we didn't hit anything but dirt that shoot, but it was, you know, still a good time. I'm still glad
still
I did. And I'd do it again.
Well, and that's made it easy for us. The fact that Carrie does integrate really well into the group with all the guys. She's not a girly girl by any means. She puts up with the language and the bullshit and all the jokes and stuff that we do. So it makes it very easy. I mean, she even worked in the shop for a couple of months doing some Cerakotes and bedding jobs and things like that.
Yeah.
If it wasn't so packed, I'm sure she would have continued on doing that, but it just wasn't enough room for 3 people. Like we do have a minion, Fabian, Shout out to Fabian. He does some stuff.
He does some stuff.
But it just got to be that there was too much going on in the shop all at one time.
Yeah.
But it was a cool experience because she Cerakoted her own chassis. Yeah. And I got to help her with that because I don't fucking do any of our work. I get credit for everything because Steve refuses to show up in public. But Steve is the craftsman. He's the wizard behind it. I just do the work bullshit.
Yeah, and triggers and notes.
Yeah. Well, talk about that. So you did go to the King of 2 Mile, but EM sponsors a lot of shoots, a lot of active involvement, especially out in the West. I'm in Ontario, so everything's west of me.
We do try. Again, that's about the give back, right? And
yeah.
I've always equated it to that if there's no racetrack, nobody builds race cars. And if you're at a racetrack and you don't know who builds the race cars, you don't know how to order one. So we try to give back where we can. I mean, we do, I guess, what we can in the market space. We typically do a lot of certificates and discounts and try to get – that's really to encourage new shooters on opportunity to get in. Or actually this last season, a lot of it was husbands building rifles for wives or kids and being able to use those certificates. And everybody, like MDT, Trigger Tech, there are so many people that sponsor these events that – you do have a chance. And a lot of the prize tables, like, yeah, your top guys get first run. But I would say at the most, for the most part, most of the Western Canadian matches, everybody leaves with an opportunity to pull something off the table, whether it be a certificate for a chassis or a coffee mug. It doesn't really matter. Everyone's sort of got a crack at it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we've approached it. So yeah, we sponsor every 2-day PRS match in Western Canada. I think this year we got to back off of BC PRL a lot because they do have a lot of matches and they're going to bankrupt me if I keep doing stuff. But everyone in Alberta, all the Saskatchewan ones, the Manitoba ones, Adam Cool runs the Northern Rimfire Series out in Ontario. Yep. So he was running Rimfire matches. So he's one of our shooters, but we sponsor his league and the finale. And we don't do any Rimfire. Like, that's just not a space that we have invested into. There's enough other stuff there that we didn't figure it was something that we needed to do. So like I say, Adam's been pretty good, but out east you guys have a lot of restrictions between
military
bases and not being allowed into the schedules and caliber restrictions and all sorts of nonsense that I see. The most of the center fire guys out east are traveling down into the States to go shoot American matches, which is too bad. But we still do what we can to donate and sponsor out there where we can, because again, it's a huge market space. We just don't find we build as many rifles out east because a lot of guys struggle finding anything that can shoot past 300. And honestly, 300 you can do with anything nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just have way too many trees in the Canadian Shield. So you absolutely are correct. We have to travel down into the U.S. to shoot any matches. And Adam, by the way, Rimfire is where it is at, out east. Out in Ontario, out in the center of the world, that our universe, as we like to say. So Rimfire is just so much more. It's easier to do out here. It just is. So you are lucky to do it out there. There are some spaces where we have had PRS out here, like at Meaford, but unfortunately, that's not taking place anymore. But do you want to talk about the Worlds? You did go to the Worlds last year. EM sponsored the Worlds, the World Team as well. So let's talk about that a little bit.
So, yeah, I guess to be clear, we didn't go to the Worlds. Carrie was invited on the ladies team. But the King of 2 Miles was the very, like, within 2 days of it, it was just 2 months and everything. And we're committed and invested into the ELR community in Canada, whereas the Worlds... Mm-hmm. The Worlds is a cool brag, but it doesn't really do a lot for us. So Mike Friesen, and again, that bastard, he bailed on me for the King of 2 Miles. He did get invited for Leo. Nelson Drolet, that's actually when we we did a barrel for him for the Worlds, and then he joined the team when he came back. He's got his own company as well, NDR Shooting Supplies. NDR Shooting? Yeah. NDR something. But he makes a bunch of really cool, like, CNC clamshell Rimfire magazines for the Tikas and the 457s and stuff. So he's got a cool little niche that he's in.
Cool.
And again, he's military. So he's shot on the military side. He's Air Force, Mike's Calgary Police Service. So out of the Canadian Leo group, we did have 50% were our shooters representing, which was cool. But beyond that, I think it would have been a great experience for Carrie, but it was a lot. It was 11 days down in Denver.
Yeah.
It was hard to commit to, so I don't know. Maybe this year we'll see.
But you did EM sponsor the shooters?
Yeah, just Mikey and Nelson. Yeah, Mikey's been a team shooter for a long time. That was our first experience with Nelson. But yeah, we did the chamber work on his barrel. Again, Canada sponsorship is not the same as you
I know.
In other sports or in the States. The gun business, I'm not going to say it's cutthroat, but it certainly is very narrow margins. Everything is working against us, whether it be our importation, our distribution, our shitty dollar. It gets very difficult to be a very profitable custom rifle builder. We do it because we're passionate about it. I mean, it's a decade, and Steve says we owe him more money than we've ever paid him. But again, we love doing what we're doing, and we love the community, so we keep doing it. And honestly, if I didn't have it, I don't have anything else, so I'd be bored out of my tree. It would be like that early retirement where you have to learn how to build birdhouses or some shit. So, I say, sponsorship is really just we have opportunities where we can provide parts cheaper to the guys or tee them up with direct manufacturers. Like Mike has a direct sponsorship with Curtis. So we've helped with some of those relationships. But really, Steve donates his labor. We part everything out at cost. And that's about the extent of our sponsorship in Canada.
Yeah.
But like I say, the matches are typically a 25 or 30% off gift certificate for barreled action. Then you got some flexibility coming to us to build the right for you. And but again, we do it where we can.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ship to the US too? Do you build for US people?
You know what, right now, so there's a bunch of logistics around that. Like, so as an example, we import Curtis into Canada. We're the Curtis dealer for Canada, have been for many years. But the problem is the State Department, U.S. State Department with ITAR rules, makes you sign an end user agreement. So when you file your permits, it specifically says that we will not be retailing it for outside of Canada again. So I would have to go through a different permitting process in order to re-export the product back into the U.S. And the problem is coming across the border. And I mean, everybody's businesses are going to be a little bit differently, but this happens to be ours. Is we pay 5% to export. It's roughly 2% in shipping. And it's another 1% to clear it coming across the border. So you immediately have an add-on of about 8% and then a shitty Canadian peso. So they come here, we rebuild them. And by the time we're trying to recoup that money and send it back south, there's just too many American builders who can turn it around with a lot less issue. Because like we have to re-export, in some cases, barrels, actions, and stocks. Yeah. And it becomes an issue there. So we haven't really pursued it. And like I say, capacity is a thing. Steve runs Genesee. He's also a welder by trade. I work for Brandt Tractor. I sell John Deere tractors full-time. Carrie's a radio station advertising manager. Like we have jobs outside of this. So it comes down to how much can we pursue regionally down in the States versus making sure that our lead times are appropriate in Canada. Now, that's not to say it's not something that's on the horizon. We do have a couple of things in the works right now. We're aiming to put out a production level hunting rifle to start with. We're looking to compete. We fix a lot of Christensen's and Fierce and Fortune. Okay. And guys, there's a lot of marketing money that goes into that. But you go and you look at an all carbon gun from Christensen for like $3,500, whereas we're using $1,200 carbon barrels. We're using $1,500 carbon stocks. We're using $2,000 actions. It gets very difficult to compete at that space. So we spent SHOT Show this year actually finding that supply chain. And we're in negotiations right now with Chase and Curtis to have his actions produced in Canada. So we can avoid the tariffs, avoid the imports. Yeah. And for Chase, that actually opens up international. South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Norway, Sweden, the UK. Like when you say PRS is growing, it's not just growing in North America. It's absolutely blown up in the European countries and South Africa and Australia. And some of those countries have even stricter gun laws than we do and even higher operating costs. And one of the things with the U.S. is with ITAR is a lot of those countries are not on that selling export. So they end up incurring a lot more cost and time in order to get them over there. So like I say, we're always looking at how we can support the community a little bit better. And if I can bring our action and have it manufactured in Canada for us off of his drawings, I think there's going to be a significant economic impact to the builds. So we're very confident that we're going to be able to produce something hopefully by the end of the year here. That's going to be using quality recognized components. They're going to come with an accuracy guarantee and the service that, hopefully we're known for, and, at a more moderate price point. I mean, certainly there's going to be a few less options on them, but we're trying to get into that more production level to support that, because waiting for somebody to order something every time, it makes it tough to know what product you need, what action to have, what barrel contours need to be in stock. So we do try to stock our mainstream stuff, but a lot of it ends up being custom orders, and that affects lead times.
Yeah. Do you find that the Canadians are buying more and more rifles and asking for more and more custom rifles?
We see swings. Like with our gun regulatory bullshit that's happened over the last few years, it's both stalled us as well as pushed a lot of people to us. So when the AR ban came through, I'll be honest, I don't think we booked anything for 60 days because everybody spent their gun budget, their gun money on the things that they knew were being taken away.
Yeah.
When the handgun came, ban came. Yeah, we did the same thing. We went out and bought handguns really quick. And so I think it diverts funds. But then at the same token, I mean, three gun, and Adriel knows this. I think Adriel is one of the guys who took over the range after Steve and I started the three gun league at Genesee. And I think he's one of the guys who really grew it into what it is today. But three gun got decimated with the bans. Yeah. Like it doesn't sound fun at all anymore. So we saw a lot of guys go from IPSC and IDPA, Van and Carly from Apex. Like they were IDPA shooter or IPSC shooters. And when they got hammered with it in restricted classes and all that, they saw PRS. And I think a lot of us look at it like, how are you going to ban a bolt action? I mean, there's conversations about mag limits and things, but I think they'll be very hard to justify even to the uneducated public that you need to ban bolt action rifles. So I think we've seen a big influx of people coming from other shooting sports that are being taken away or over-regulated coming in. So I think that's been a help, but I think we've certainly noticed, and even talking to some of our competitors, that the volume seems to be decreasing as the market saturates out. So instead of everything being full builds, there's a lot of rebarrel work, right? Guys already have actions and they're just looking for their second and third barrels.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did notice that with the AR ban, a lot less. Used to sell out in like 5 minutes, like a 70-person match, and not anymore, especially now because people bought their replacement, and then in December they got banned, or recently here, if you were unlucky enough to have one of those. So yeah, I was at a match on Saturday, and it was a weird collection of rifles for a three gun match.
Yeah, well, and you know as well as anyone else. Like I remember when we first started it was very hillbilly, and guys showed up with anything and everything. But then you started to realize that as guys were running through a stripper clip, grands, that it just took too fucking long. And even a 5-round magazine, like I hated it. Well, I didn't hate it. I love three gun. I thought it was a great sport when I was in it. I hated the fact that I had to wear like six magazines on me to shoot a course of fire.
Uh huh.
It was a lot of reloading, a lot of kit. And you look at the guys in the States and they wear a battle belt or a stiff shooter belt. And they
two mags.
Yeah, two mags on it and two pistol mags and a couple of shotgun things. And they're off, right? Whereas we were having to run full chest rigs, we were having to run battle belts. Like, it was all this crap just so we could carry enough ammo to shoot it. And like,
yard cell.
Yeah, and we're going along stuff where guys are having to use lever guns and other. Yeah, exactly.
That's an M1 Garand N block pouch.
Yeah,
that's where we're at.
Right, it completely screws up the course of fire, and it makes it really unenjoyable to be a guy attending a match who you sit for an hour, you shoot for 90 seconds, and then you sit for an hour again. So it's one of those things that there's always a pivot. We always seem to find something new in the Canadian industry to get around these regulations and modify it and change. But I think we're at the point now where it's a fuck off and we're going to run what we run.
Yeah.
Well, that's essentially it. Just like you were saying, Shane, that people, so bolt action, right? Is pushing people over to the PRS side of things is what I'm seeing or what I'm feeling to, but you're right. It'll saturate. Canada is such a small market. The market will be saturated, and then it is all about actually, you know, new barrels or upgrading the trigger. Trigger Tech is somebody that you use as part of EM. Wonderful, fantastic triggers.
And people, like I'll be totally honest, I was hounding them when they were first going from crossbow triggers to Remington triggers. So we've been selling trigger tech from day one. But the team over there, like Mark Skills and Taylor Bacon, I mean, there's a whole team over there, but those guys, I'll be honest, it was a SHOT Show. We have this like ritual that we do every year. Yeah. And I took Jay Anderson. I mentioned him earlier, and we went to my first SHOT Show together, and we ended up booking the wrong hotel. And it was right beside this divey strip club. So we ended up drinking our faces off there every night for all of SHOT Show. And it was pretty funny. So the next year, we ended up going. I took Carrie because I'm like, this place is so fun. So we ended up going to that. And we're sitting there, and the door opens, and all the light cracks in because we're all sitting there like perverts. And it's Trigger Tech. And they have covered their faces. They're like, nope, can't be seen here. They tried to run away. We put them in. And we all got drunk together. We had a good time. We built a relationship. Carrie and Mark have the same birthday. Yeah. And I get shit for that if I don't text him first. And it turned into something like that. Next year, we were in their catalog as a recommended builder. We ended up building Mark his rifle. We did their shipping manager's rifle. We ended up having to provide a little bit of service for one of Quinn's rifles. And it just kind of grew from there. So like at this point now, we actually have our own trigger with Trigger Tech.
Awesome.
They've been awesome enough that we take their special because the special, it's a good all-purpose trigger. It goes down. I get most of them down to about 10 ounces or 12 ounces anyways. Mm-hmm. But they give us a custom CNC skeletonized shoe. It's not available on the rest of their trigger. So it is a unique feel on the EMs. And they come laser engraved with our logo on the side of them, which is awesome. And to be able to see small guys like us, we truly are. We're small dudes. We work out of our garage. We're not a massive corporation like Christensen or anything like that. To see that level of support has been absolutely outstanding. So we're at a point now where you can't drop off a Jewel or a Timney. We just won't install them. Like, it's Trigger Tech or go away. And we like those relationships with guys. And don't get me wrong, Chase at Curtis, it's the same sort of thing. Like, he's worked around us. He's provided us the specs and the features that we want. Service and warranty. He just trusts us. Like, if I tell him there's a problem, we fix it. He reimburses us and the customers go away happy. March Scopes Canada. We started shooting March for ELR a few years ago. And while we are a March dealer, I typically don't try to sell them outside of a rifle package because March Scopes Canada is Doug Wright. He's based out of Calgary. He's phenomenal. Like, and don't get me wrong. I've had an issue or two with March in the past. Doug is that guy. He's right there. He replaces your product immediately. Like, I had my Genesis for my ELR rifle go down, and the next day I had another replacement in the mailbox, and it turned out it was a batch that they had made a production error on. I met him in Red Deer. Those Genesis are $8,400 a piece. He had seven of them on the tailgate, and we went through every one of them until we found the right one. We identified the serial numbers that needed to be warrantied. March replied within 12 hours saying this was the issue. They emailed out everybody who picked one up. They had the fix and replacements in place.
Yeah.
It's that level of service that is more important to me as far as building relationships and engaging in who's vendors. Like, are March a good scope? Absolutely. They're a tier one, top tier product. Are there other ones out there? Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with Night Forest or Callus, Tangent Theta. Like, that's kind of the realm you play in. But I don't get that level of service from any of those other manufacturers, and not saying they're bad companies, but we got a guy local we can deal with. That was why we did Jury Barrels for a long time, is we could talk to Bob. He was right out of Red Deer. He was local. I would drive to his house and go pick up barrels. The last 5 or 6 years, we were pretty much exclusively IBI barrels. And I mean, we've done like 700 of those. They were phenomenal. We had no issues, never had a service complaint. And I'll be honest, me and Ryan started out our relationship threatening to punch each other out of chat.
Well, hey, it's Ryan.
Yeah. we could both be strong-willed guys, but we figured it out. And we had a very good relationship with them. Honestly, it just came down to production. We had to open up a second vendor because I think Ryan told us we were the second largest IBI dealer on the planet. And we were starting to see some lead times. And they seemed to have that fixed up, but we had to open up a second vendor for barrels.
Makes sense.
Yeah. We support Canadian where we can. Like, the guys at Kadex, oh my God, phenomenal. Like, love working with those guys. MDT, again, a fantastic team. Ryan McLean shot for us for a couple of seasons. So we got to know Ryan really well. And
yeah, he's okay too.
Yeah. Well, and Martin's Dutch, but he found out that Carrie's Dutch. Okay. So she was shooting an MPA and he gave me shit about it.
Yeah.
So he even said, he's like, what do I got to do? Get you guys into an MDT. And he looked after Carrie. We got a good deal on an MDT. And honestly, like, it's a phenomenal product. Not like you're down trading or anything like that, right? And the local support. I think MDT is probably one of those companies that has done more for the industry than anybody else. Whether you need to see a video of Guess Your Distance or not, I don't know. But they put out more technical information and more learning information from their pro team and their YouTube channels than I think
anybody
does. Some interesting stuff, too.
Yeah, you're talking about some really, really good companies and really those relationships that you've built. And as I said, Canadian companies for the most part as well, although you do use some American companies too to build your rifles. You're, again, as I said, EM has built that reputation and in quite a short period of time too. And also with, a really, really small, Canada is small. So any other questions, Adriel, that you have for Shane?
Yeah, maybe where can people buy your stuff? Do you guys sell in retailers or is all custom? Do you guys ever build stuff and like have it in stock, like spec builds, or is it all like total custom?
For the most part, it is all custom. Our website is trash. Like, I'll be totally honest. Like, neither of us are tech guys. I can steal music and find porn, but beyond that, I'm not it's one of those issues where honestly, I want to engage with the customer. Like we could do a web store and a drop down and a clicky box and all that bullshit. But I find that it detaches you from what the end product is. And being that I am a professional salesperson, I like to consider it a solutions provider. We're listening to what our customers want, identifying their need and providing solutions. A lot of guys phone in and maybe they think, this is what I want to do because I read this on the internet. But when you start talking to them, you find out that they've got different goals or a different budget or maybe some weird ergonomics that you've got to work around. I would rather have that conversation and make sure that maybe a guy who's never hand loaded before doesn't build a dasher, right? And there's nothing wrong with the dasher, but there's more pleasant experiences as far as getting into precision rifle than and going into Gucci hand load stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's part of the interaction. When we go to the OEM rifle, we're just calling it an OEM. I don't know, effective, but production rifle. When we go there, we do know that we're going to have to get to a web store with some drop-down options, but that we're going to have that streamlined and set up that you'll be able to basically click and order your configuration and we'll have it shipped in 5 to 7 days. But yeah, everything else for the most part is custom. We are a custom shop. We're not a gunsmith. We're a precision rifle builder, so we don't do blue ink and like fancy engraving or woodwork. We are here building rifles. We build competition rifles. We build your traditional tactical precision rifle. We build most of our hunting rifles tend to be carbon fiber, but we do build, we don't chase the ultralight market. We chase accurate hunting rifles, not ultralight rifles. And not to say an ultralight isn't accurate, but they're very difficult to shoot. So it's just not a market that we care about that much. We build ELR rifles. I like to think that we're kind of at the peak of the ELR community. We shoot it. Like Steve, when he got into it, Steve's a guy who doesn't have a rifle built on a standard bolt face. He only has Shytag bolt-faced rifles. He's got a 375 enabler. Now, his hunting rifle is a 6.5-284, but it's a Tika. He doesn't shoot anything small. He was one of the founders, or I guess one of the guys who started shooting ELR in Canada. He was one, I think, the fourth 408 Shytag in the nation. So that's his passion. And then when Rob Furlong opened up the King of 2 Miles, it was a big opportunity to come out instead of just going to your right away or your buddy's farm field and walking them in. And then you print your group. Like there's a lot more accountability when you show up on the clock and in a competition with a fixed set of rules. And it was a huge eye opener. Like Steve and I have both shot 2,800. Carrie's first time up shooting ELR, she shot 2,100 and stacked a nice group. It's one of those things that with all the technology, the quality of the barrels, the quality of the projectiles that we've got now, that it's not unobtainable for people. But we try to participate in doing it so we're familiar with what it is that guys are doing at the cutting edge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So awesome. You did say that your website is shit. So
You do have a website, though.
It will at least take you the right places. It's www.emprifles.ca. Our Facebook and our Instagram, honestly, is where we get 90% of our engagement from. So I think Instagram is just EM Precision Rifles. Facebook is the same thing. All my contact info is on there, but my preference is either to shoot me an email, but honestly, if it's a long-winded email with a lot of questions, I'm going to phone you or ask you to phone me.
Okay.
I do like that one-on-one interaction. I like to get to know my customers. I like to find out, again, what the needs are. Yep. And we don't want people engaging with Steve. And it's not because there's anything wrong with Steve, but if people are talking to him, he's not building rifles, right? So we do try to split that workload up. And while Steve has become, I am confident and I'm comfortable saying he's the best gunsmith in Canada or precision rifle builder. He doesn't know anything about the product lines, what goes together, what fits together, which brand does what. So that's all kind of ended up falling under my role. So he just looks for parts lists. I create him a work order. He puts them together and I talk about your guarantee and he gets nervous every time I guarantee a rifle. But we are now like 13 years into building these things. And I think we just had our 8th warranty barrel that we actually had to replace. Wow. So 8 and 13 years, I'm okay with that return rate. Mm-hmm. We're only tracking about 1.5%. But again, we'll stand by you. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Is we have a customer right now who's reached out. The builder he built with, the rifle didn't shoot and he didn't get a lot of support and he's not happy with it. So we're going to do a rebarrel for him. It's really frustrating. We had a young fella, brand new baby at home. You know how things get stressful. Money gets tight. He bought a pre-fit barreled action from a very large vendor here in Canada and it didn't shoot. He had extraction issues and brass problems and all sorts of things. And it turned out to be a PVA barrel. We have just recently become, us and Inside Arms are the PVA dealers for Canada now. And the previous dealer was not looking after it. And I heard the story. He told me he just wanted to sell it and just wanted to build something off of a Curtis.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel right. So I told him to send in the rifle. It ended up that there was a dimensional issue in the action. Steve rechambered, set the barrel back. Josh Koontz at PVA threw us a free barrel to deal with it. We got the customer out shooting. He messaged me back. And after 18 months of fighting over it, he now has a gun that shoots and is accurate and he's having fun with it.
Perfect.
So it isn't just about, I guess, the monetary gain. It really is about how can we service people the best. And don't get me wrong, there's people out there that hate me. I saw a YouTube video, somebody wasn't real happy with me. I can't please everybody, but I sincerely do try. And Steve's not there to please anybody, but he's there to make sure that rifle is what you expect out of that rifle.
Yeah. Well, when I did make a connection with Steve, he said, go talk to Shane. And
yeah. Shane's a good talker.
Yeah. So people can just give you a call or send you an email, but, and then also connect with you on Facebook as well as Instagram too. So.
Yeah. And all that info is readily available. If you search EMP rifles, it shows up pretty quickly. I am a traveling sales monkey. So I'm on my phone nearly 24/7. If guys phone me, leave a message or a text. If you don't, I'm going to phone that number back and find out what you needed anyways. So I do try to pride myself in communication because I know that not most of the gun businesses all have side gigs. Like most of the guys all have another job. So people get tied up and you can lose that communication very quickly. So we do try to do our best as far as communication goes. The schedules, I would say, is the hardest thing. You do your best to estimate a schedule, but when you're dealing with imports and logistics and permits and nonsense, I mean, some of that stuff does float a little bit, right? So we try to be as upfront as we can with stuff. We're very risk adverse. If we don't perceive it's going to be a good build or there's going to be ergonomic issues or there's going to be a performance risk or it's just a dumb idea, in my opinion, we'll generally just decline the work politely and say it's not something we're comfortable with for whatever reason. We want to take on things that we know we're 100% confident are going to perform, are going to shoot, and are going to meet your needs. And there's lots of other builders on there that will do absolutely anything you want. And unfortunately, people do learn lessons that way. I mean, I bought Vortex and I wish somebody would have told me not to at the beginning.
They got a great warranty.
Yep.
You know what? That's 100% my issue. I don't like
to use it.
The product test on the customer base and survive off of warranty. And to throw some shade over at Ultimatum, at the very beginning, that was what they did. They had nothing but problems, three releases. They were garbage under the old management. Ryan Stacey took it over. dude, that Gen 2, he sent us one. And he just said, I want you to take this Gen 2, barrel it, shoot it, give us all the feedback, whatever we need to change. He did it to a couple of reputable smiths. And they came up with a phenomenal product. So if you look, you'll find Facebook history and Canadian Gun Nuts, where that was, I shit-talked Ultimatum quite a bit. The new product is fantastic, and it comes down to that accountability and the people who are supporting it. Yeah. And that's what we like to see. Mikey Friesen and Alex Sherwood, two of our guys, were two of the original testers on the HMB actions. They had some flaws at the beginning. They listened. They came up with a phenomenal product. So like I say, we can be vocal when we disagree with something or when we're not happy about something. But at the same token, we'll support you, especially Canadian, we'll support as soon as you have that same idea that the customer comes first. And beta testing on your customer, whether it was Ultimatum or Vortex, which, I mean, that's their whole business model. It's just not something that I think is fair to the consumer. Just because, I guess, break it down this way. Your average match is $250 registration. You're going to spend $300 to $400 in ammunition at it. You got to probably pay for a hotel or travel, fuel, some accommodation. So on average, we typically factor out about $1,200 a match to go shoot one. I don't care how good your warranty is if it shits the bed on my second stage and my whole weekend's fucked up, that you got me a scope the same week. I'm still out that money. And unfortunately, there are some vendors that have done that. And it's not something that we want to be a part of. I don't want to hear my customers phone me and say they missed an entire match because their rifle malfunctioned on something that we should have done right from the beginning.
Well, yeah. It's the match money. And then it's also like if you're competitive in your competition, you get pissed about losing because of, I don't mind losing because I did something wrong. I really don't like losing because my equipment failed me.
Yeah. Well, and again, in Alberta, I would hazard to say that the big majority of the guys shooting PRS are oil patch or pipeline or construction. You do have to have, I would say, a six-figure income to really participate in the shooting sports nowadays. I mean, ammunition, we used to hand load for 50 cents. We're hand loading for $1.40 now. Like it's, and the tariffs hit projectiles and brass. So look forward to that in the next 3 months, right? Not everybody can book every weekend. Like, I'm fortunate my company supports me. So I do shoot almost every weekend. I shoot every 2 day center fire match that I can. It's hard when a guy books one off and it's one of the two matches he's going to make all season. And then his joke shits to bed or his action blows up or whatever it happens to be. It's just one of those things where you need to know. Like, I see guys who travel around with two triggers. I've been shooting trigger tech for 12 years, and I've never had one fail. And now that I've said that, I should probably put a spare. Right?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, again, like, thanks for coming on again, Shane and Carrie. Yeah. If anyone listening right now wants to learn more, you can head over to EM Precision Rifles. Google it. It's emprifles.ca. Or if you Google it, you'll find it on Facebook and Instagram. We'll make sure to put those links inside the show description. And thanks again for coming on the show, guys.
Anytime.
Thank you very much for having us. Appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Take care, guys.
Thanks again to EM Precision for coming on. Let's get into our feedback. Oh, did we already cover this email?
I don't know. I wasn't on last week.
Yes, we did. We covered that one last week. We're talking about 3D printers. Yeah, we did that. Yeah. Why don't we get on to YouTube comments? Tony, you want to take those?
Yep, I have YouTube comments open. We have CCFR on the 595 episode, Jared Cox and Sterling Arms, the three cowboy hats. I guess that's fitting. Firefly 9838 on, I guess, the live. It's 179, some sub 200 models of M1 carbine being banned. Your country is so cooked.
Thanks.
I guess. I agree. Yeah, we're very lit. We're very on fire. Emergency episode, new gun ban. Oh God, which one is this?
There's going to be lots of them. The one we did on Friday there.
M48A5. Apparently Trudeau doesn't know that stretching it out doesn't make it bigger, just more disappointing. Fair. But we are already all disappointed. Last four comments all from 595 from last week. 3D Video Murray says, buddy's GHM9 shot much worse than my JR Carbine. JR Carbine or the R9? And I blamed it for the big plastic piece. I figure it was put in there to support the ridiculously long forehand on that model, as its index area on the receiver is pretty dinky. I have a hard time believing the barrel whip is actually an issue on a blowback, as both of my ASR, I guess the Aero Survival, and the JR Carbine were exceptionally accurate by PCC standards, well under 2 MOA, 5 shot groups. At what distance, though? I do like the weight saving of the counterbore idea. That is probably talking about the
R9.
Shorter actual barrel under the shroud. Last three from Eddie, so over-completing his objective by 50%. Destin, I would love to see true dope sent to Ukrainian front lines, but we know it would never happen to the elitist. He may be losing his PM job. I'm sure he has something cushy lined up already. That and has got enough money, his grandkids won't have to work. There's two thumbs up on that comment.
They'll have speaking spots.
Yeah. Adriel, that Nork NR15 bolt and safety looks a lot like a copy of the BRNO Model 1. The Bruno Model 1?
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
The wing rotates 45 degrees to the right to engage. The JW25A safety looks like a copy of the Bruno number 2, which also copied by the CZ452. So now that Heritage Rough Rider is out, you like revolvers, but only in a rifle? Smiley face. Thanks for inviting the...
Quick answer. No, I still don't.
Okay, no revolvers. Thanks for the invite to the podcast. My schedule doesn't work well with your podcast times. I don't have a particular topic for the show. We can work with you on the scheduling thing. The shooting sports I participate in is already covered by previous guests. I would like to leave comments as well as liking and subscribing to boost Slamfire in the YouTube algorithm. YouTube isn't too firearms friendly, but they are one of the largest podcast platforms. That is unfortunately true. But thank you, Eddie, for that.
Yeah.
And last comment from Eddie. If we get a majority CPC government, hopefully we'll have a simplified classification and won't have to worry about the silly FRTs anymore. That would be the hope. Cross our fingers. So a longer stock R9 with a shorter barrel, that's still over 26 overall length and will be non-restricted.
So they,
at that point, do you still chose, want an R9?
They chose to go with the length that they did. So the OAL, even with the stock off, is still greater than 26 inches.
Interesting.
Because you can remove the stock. So
right, Picatinny rail.
And it still fires. So they chose that on purpose. They wanted that longer action for that reason.
Got it.
He was mentioning like simplified classification. I think we're going to get simplified classification whether we like it or not. We either get a good version of it
or a bad version of it.
A really bad version of it. Yeah, we might get
that. How is it going to classify that? Like if it can achieve the round per second of or round per minute of whatever.
Like it'll be like Australia.
Rapid fire capable?
Rapid fire capable. They brought in that language of rapid. Yeah, they didn't say it wasn't rapid fire, but like there's something
able
that she mentioned.
Discharge and like quickly, so to speak,
faster than language. Is what's safely required for civilian use, according to their experts. Which who the fuck knows who those people are? But yeah, cool. Okay, Facebook, Instagram, Discord, that kind of thing. We've been talking on Discord. 3D printing. We've been talking more about that on the Discord. Again, that's not a gun part. That's a stripper clip thingamabobber. Totally okay to have the files for that in Canada and be talking about it. We're on Spotify and all that kind of stuff. We talked about this one. If you're going to buy something from Cabela's or Brownells, feel free to buy it using our link or fuck them. Buy stuff from Canadian retailers. Fuck those Americans. And let's just buy stuff from Canadians when we can. Patreon-y Alex J. I did not put your thing in the mail, but I have it.
It's a lie? What?
No, it's in an envelope. I still have like my kids' passports like in the envelopes ready to put in the mail to send for a renewal. So It's not just a him thing. It's a me thing. I'll put it in the mail.
Disappointed.
You should be. If you want to email the show, send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Shout outs and recommendations. I got one for Bats88. He's got a video on the Alex mod 1-4 scope that I'm still reviewing, but I'm just, going slower. He's got a good review out on that. Tony, cool. Anything from you?
I don't think I have anything for this week now.
Okay.
Shout outs to EM Precision.
Yeah.
A couple coming on to the show. I don't think I'm in the market for a PRS rig, but Dustin might reach out. We don't know yet.
Very good. Join our Discord server. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and Player. We are streaming live to Player today. Join the CCFR, and we'll see you next week.
Good night, Kelly.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.